Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. I'm here today with my friend in hockey, Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, Bruce, yesterday we were talking about, I was talking about the need to change coaches, and you were agreeing with that, generally speaking, and
it was.
Happened.
Generally.
Happened. Yeah, generally.
Yep.
Happened. So Todd McClelland is out after 3.5 seasons, 3.25 seasons with the Edmonton Oilers, and veteran NHL coach Ken Hitchcock is in. So Bruce, we're going to go through what people are saying about this on Twitter.
Yep.
We're going to look at what Peter Chiarelli of the Oilers, Oilers GM Peter Chiarelli says, and then we'll go to what Ken Hitchcock is saying today. So let's start with some tweets. Just give me one second and I'll find the first tweeteroo. It's from Terry Jones. Now, Bruce, this was an interesting dynamic in Edmonton in the last few days, in that you often don't find the 200 hockey guys, the old timey hockey guys, agreeing with the analytics, you know, the Corsi gang, those two groups coming together to agree with each other. But there was wide agreement from those two groups. The problem with the Edmonton Oilers is Peter Chiarelli and not Todd McClelland. Well, the old-timey hockey guys had a lot of time for Todd McClelland, and they're almost to a man. I think to a man, they were defending Todd McClelland and didn't think he should be fired. They thought the Oilers should continue with him as the coach, give him more time to work things out with this team. And they thought the problem was Chiarelli. I've noticed that this group of people really likes Todd McClelland. McClelland's relations with the media were extraordinarily good. We could tell from watching his press conferences that he was a very articulate, forthcoming coach, and he obviously had great relations with the media. And that may have, you have great relations with someone that builds up a lot of social capital with people, and they're willing to cut you a lot more slack, I think. I just think that's how the world works. That's how social capital works. And if you're able to build that up in the world with people, more power to you. That is an incredible skill to have. And I think McClelland was good to have. That's one of the reasons that I think he's been a great coach. He builds it with players. He builds it with the media, builds it with management. And he's had a long and successful career as a hockey coach. And I think, he obviously, the media was on his side, and I think the players for a long time were on his side. I'm not sure in the end what was going on. I mean, Connor McDavid was asked recently what he thought, and he wasn't blaming the coach. But what's McDavid going to say? I mean, he can't tell the media what he thinks of the coach. And I think it's the wrong question to ask a player. There's no win in being any kind of truthful. And the player's not even in any position to judge it on a certain level. Like, there's just, when you're losing, everyone's hating each other and it's frustrated on some level, I'm sure. You're hating yourself if you're in the NHL and you're losing. So,
well, Hitchcock was coaching in the NHL before Connor McDavid was even born, you know, just to put some perspective on the situation.
Now, to finish my thought on the strange coming together of the analytics guys and the old-timey hockey guys, the analytics guys never have liked Chiarelli. I mean, Chiarelli fired analytics guy Tyler Dello, which soured a lot of people, I think, right then and there. And they've never liked his approach, Shirelli's approach, his discussion about, you know, the need for character and grit and that kind of stuff doesn't sit well. So we were kind of in the middle, Bruce, we were on the outside of both those groups. And seeing the wisdom and perhaps changing coaches here. Now, representative of the old-timey hockey guys is Terry Jones of the Edmonton Sun, who has been around hockey as long as Ken Hitchcock, which is saying a lot. And Terry Jones today tweeted about the news: Ken Hitchcock, new Oilers head coach, is shocking. Disagree with firing McClelland, but hometown guy Hitch is loved by Edmontonians. Conference call with GM Peter Chiarelli within the hour. So what do you think about Jones's take, Bruce?
Well, I think it goes back to what you said about the 200 hockey men. McClelland's got a lot more cachet, I think, locally with, he's got more day-to-day contact with the media. Certainly we, even just following the team's website, we see and hear a lot more from the head coach on a day-to-day basis. and we do from the GM, who sort of drops in periodically. And you know, one of his mannerisms there are a little more brusque and abrupt. And I don't think he's won many fans with either with his personality or personal touch, or frankly with his moves and what he's done with the team. And this is where you get the confluence between the Poles Apart crew. You know, they agree much more on disliking Shirelli than they agreed on liking McLellan, I would say.
I think that's a fair comment. And there's obviously, I've said this before, I said this yesterday, if Shirelli had been fired today, I would have been surprised, because I wasn't mm-hmm. expecting to see that. But you can make a strong argument that Shirelli deserves to be fired today as well. And I think Shirelli got at that a little bit himself.
My friend G Money, also known as Oilers Nerd Alert, he ran a little poll yesterday on Twitter poll, one of those what I call a matrix poll, and he said, "What should they do? Should they fire McLellan? Should they fire Shirelli? Should they fire both, or fire neither and trust the plan?" And as I fearlessly predicted right off the top, fire both clearly won the poll at 60%. And fire Shirelli was a strong second at 26%, also as predicted by me, I have to say. And then firing T-Mac alone only got 6%. Like, people are mad at Shirelli.
It'd be I don't know how representative Oiler fans his Twitter base.
1,800 votes.
That's a lot of people. Yeah. Yeah, that is a lot of people that starts to get up there. Although he's from the analytics side, right? So most of the people who would follow him would be from that crowd. But you're right, when you get up to that kind of number, it's a pretty broad group of people who are voting on the poll, the online poll. All right, here's someone from the analytics side. Here's someone I follow on Twitter, Jeff Chapman. New at New Wave Oil. He writes for the Copper and Blue. I think he might be the editor. And I generally like his takes on things. Like, I find him interesting and congenial on Twitter. Yeah, so anyway, here's what he has to say. This is a very early hot take, but swapping out Todd McLellan for Ken Hitchcock and nothing more isn't going to do a whole hill of beans. So Jeff is in the group of people that's very anti-Shirelli, wanted to see Shirelli fired, and won't be satisfied until that happens. Although Jeff might be satisfied if the Oilers started to win a ton, that might satisfy him. But there is a lot of people who are just dead set against Shirelli, and I think it's fair to say the majority of Oilers fans are at this point. And so what's your take on what Jeff had to say?
86%, according to G Money's poll, the two answers that included fire Shirelli were the most popular. I think there's a little bit of misapprehension out there that Hitchcock and McLellan are interchangeable. I don't see it. They're very different men. Obviously, they're both experienced, highly regarded, proven NHL coaches by the time they arrived in Edmonton. But their approaches are different. I don't think you're just going to see more of the same under Hitchcock. And you know, just a fresh voice in the room is going to help the process along, and especially when that voice is a silver-tongued orator such as Ken Hitchcock, who really has his background as a salesperson at United Cycle really shows up in basically all that he does. Even he even came right out and used the word selling and buying in his comments. Terms of he's the seller and the players have to buy in. And I think that fresh voice, I mean, players don't listen to the new voice in the room. It will be at their peril, let's put it that way, because he is one tough taskmaster.
He is indeed. And the Oilers couldn't let, as Shirelli himself was saying, he owed it to the fans to make a move here. You just can't go through another season where you're not sure if it's the roster or the coach. You're just not sure at this point. And that's the truth. There's this big debate on the Oilers Twitter and social media. Is it the coach, or is it the Is it the Shirelli or is it the roster that he's put together? And no one can really say, Bruce. There's just no way of finding out. The problem is if you fire Shirelli right now, you're not changing the roster and you're not changing the coach. So you still won't know the answer to that. There is a chance, though, that part of the problem has become the coach. Same coach who had a lot of success with a very similar roster, 2016-17. But maybe for whatever reason, he's gotten stale. Something's gotten stale. The losing's gotten to everything. Maybe they just need a new voice, new capable person, some new strategies, some new ideas, whatever it is. The only way they could find out if someone else could do something with this particular roster for this year was for them to bring in a new coach. And I just think it was like, this is a no-brainer. This is a very simple decision. It's hockey management 101. And it's that way for a reason, because you can't trade the players. Firing the GM doesn't do anything. You've got to try something. That's right. So I'm not against firing Shirelli if they don't make the playoffs. If you want to salvage the season, listen, McClellan was going back to the same old answers again and again and again. He had gone back to McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, this has got to be, if you're a player on that team and you don't think that's the right move, these kinds of things have got to be frustrating right by now. So, yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of that. Let's go to a comment, Bruce, by next up is Sid. Is it Sexy Arrow?
Cicero? I always have trouble with that one.
Cicero? Sid Cicero.
He's on the score now, Sportsnet 360.
Here's what he had to say. Oilers fire Todd McClellan. His main mistakes: trading a future MVP, signing a $6 billion player who can't score, and failure to draft any real wingers. Oh, sorry, that wasn't him. So this is a common sentiment, Bruce, that Shirelli is to blame. What do you think?
Well, I think the people who are on the fire Shirelli bandwagon, and there are many of them, they can take out of this today that this is one step along the way. Like in hockey, as a general rule, the GM gets one coach firing and one second look with a second opinion from the guy behind the bench, to use an old McTavish saying. It sounds like, despite the connections with Hockey Canada through Bob Nicholson, Kevin Lowe, etc., Hitchcock and Shirelli, the two of them got along very well in the Sochi Olympics, and that it was Shirelli's choice to bring him in, and no doubt that would have got the approval of the other guys. I mean, Hitchcock has an extensive background with Hockey Canada, so they all know one another. Hitchcock mentioned it quite a bit in his own presser about how impressed he was with the people in the organization and how he's worked with them, including the assistant coaches, which is really good. But the general sentiment is, you know, if this isn't turned around by the end of the season, Shirelli's probably gone. And if I'm not mistaken, you and I basically agreed on both points yesterday, that the time to can the coach is during the season, but the time to can the GM is during the off season. So this could be step one of a two-stage reorganization.
Alrighty, let's go to the next comment, and it's from former Oilers player, now broadcaster Jason Strudwick, and his quote is, "Tough love coming into Oilers dressing room ASAP." And that was an interesting comment. You know, that's obviously Hitchcock's reputation is for being a pretty tough guy. Now, I'd have to look at his record, Bruce, over time to see how he's done with younger players, because obviously one of the keys for this season is there's a lot of young wingers and forwards. They're going to have to get something out of some of these young guys. I don't think that the veterans they have, like maybe I'm wrong, maybe like Kyle Brodziak and Cassian are going to suddenly turn it up a notch and become star performers for Ken Hitchcock. But I think the answer for this team is going to be players like Jesse Puljujärvi and Kaitari Yamamoto stepping up, or Cooper Marody or Cameron Hebig or Tyler Benson. And that's going to be a part of the answer. And is Hitchcock that kind of coach? And will this tough love approach work with them? Now, maybe tough love is just being direct, forceful, and not taking any BS from people. And, you know, telling people exactly what the expectations are, having a high standard and having them meet it. But if he's not, maybe there's a certain lack of support. I don't know. In there, but tough love can work with people, with young people. So what's your take?
Well, he does have a reputation of being a hard ass for sure. And it's funny, like he's, I mentioned him being a salesman, and I think that's part of the hard ass thing. Like he's really got, he's brilliant with the media, but what he is first and foremost is highly eloquent. He says what he means, and the message is clear. And he made it clear today in his I thought impressive avail that this team is they're not going to be getting mixed messages from this man. They're going to be told what to expect from him, what to expect from themselves, and how they're going to succeed. And if they don't, it's going to be even tougher love. And even if they do, it's going to be buying into his way, and some of those lessons are going to be hard. And he was making no bones about that.
Here's a quote from Dean Millard at Duck Millard, who's a broadcaster. Mm-hmm. And his comment was, Todd McLellan had the seventh worst winning percentage of any team in the NHL during his 266-game stint behind the bench with the Oilers. There have now been 34 in-season firings in the last 10 years in the NHL. Ken Hitchcock takes over for Todd McLellan in Edmonton, was a victim twice in those 10 years. So this tweet to me points out two things. This isn't Hitchcock's first rodeo, yep. Far from it. As you say, it's as likely his last rodeo as an NHL head coach. But the seventh worst winning percentage of any team in the NHL, this speaks to me like, again, he had not made the playoffs in three out of the last four seasons. One of those in San Jose with a good team. Two of last year in Edmonton with what could arguably be a good team. And this year he wasn't heading there. So I really thought McLellan had had his chances and it ran out of answers. What's your take on Dean Millard's comment?
Yeah, I mean, we noted yesterday his winning percentage in Edmonton, points percentage is 533, which is well off of the 508 overall, which is well off the league median by about 50 points. And so I'm not surprised to hear his seventh from the bottom, because there's such a pack in the middle in the parity era. I think the writing was on the wall. You and I both read it, and here we are. So it's on to the next. Hitchcock has a career points percentage of 603. Much of that garnered during the non-Bettman point era, or the non-shootout era, when the points were so freely handed out. So it's one of those kind of blended results that's significantly higher than the median. He's had good teams, and he's been a highly decorated coach. He's coached over 1,500 games, David. There's only five coaches that have ever done that. 250 games plus with four different teams, and one of only three coaches behind the great Scotty Bowman and the much mentioned Joel Quenneville, number three with 823 career victories in the regular season. So
yeah,
this guy, not his first rodeo, 823 wins. That's like 10 82 game seasons of all wins. Like, it takes a while to get there.
He's been Chuck Wagon racing for a long time. All right. And when you look at his record, I mean, he's had tremendous success, Bruce, in three different cities, Dallas, mm-hmm. Philadelphia, and St. Louis.
Not to mention Kamloops and Sherwood Park.
Yeah, fair enough. And, not so much success in two others, Columbus, right. and his most recent stint in Dallas. But even in Dallas, Bruce, in 82 games, he had 42 wins that year. 42 wins for the Oilers could probably get them in the playoffs this year. So
92 points. He missed the playoffs by, I think, 3 points.
Yeah. So anyway, that's he's been a very, very successful coach. So there's the only question is, is he up to date? Is he relevant? Has he got the energy? Takes a tremendous amount of energy to coach. Here's my favorite coach quote. Last Twitter quote that we'll do. Jeff Hamilton is a fan, I think. He says, "This move reeks of a desperate attempt by the Oilers ownership to salvage yet another lost season," which is entirely appropriate. I like it.
What's to argue?
Exactly. I mean, this season was, Bruce.
Not the only thing that reeks if you've been watching the Oilers play of late.
I wasn't buying the argument from all these guys. Well, it's the roster. I think it's the roster. Well, that's an interesting opinion, but there's a way to find out here. And do you really think that McClellan is the real question is McClellan a good bet to turn things around at this point, or is it a better bet to go with somebody else? And to me, it was hands down a better bet to try another approach this year. And he got his chance this year. It's not like McClellan didn't get his chance. We're a quarter of the way into the season. This team has 9 wins and 11 losses. They're trending down. It was time to move in another direction. It's just abundantly clear to me, which is what I was arguing yesterday.
There was lots of speculation last summer when McClellan was retained and all the assistants were let go or removed on, reassigned or however, that McClellan would be given the start of the season and maybe, some would say the first quarter or up to U.S. Thanksgiving or whatever. Anyway, we're there and the team is spinning its wheels and actually kind of been in reverse the last while. And at a certain point, you have to say, well, what's the risk? Like, are there any signs there that this team is ready to take it to the next level? And those signs are the next level is somewhere lower than the level they are now. That it's time, and the shelf life of an NHL coach is short, as we discussed yesterday. There's only 3 guys that have been with the team longer than Todd McClellan, and he got a full shot. And
frankly, the strongest argument to fire Peter Shirley right now for me would have been if he hadn't fired the coach and hadn't made this move. Then you got to fire him because he's not thinking straight. You had to make this move. That's how strongly I started to feel about it in the end, and just putting together the pieces here. You can't throw away the season. You got to roll the dice that this roster can be revived by somebody else, because this coach has had a lot of time with this roster and it wasn't working out. Bruce, let's go to what Shirelli said. Let's have one quote each. One the main point from Shirelli. What was that, do you think, in the interview?
Okay, well, he was asked about his own roster and whether he'd be making changes. And he said, we might look at some moves, but I think it, meaning the roster, is good enough. None of us can absolve ourselves, including the players. I think they can be better.
So what do you think?
Well, none of us can absolve ourselves. They can be better. It sounded like the finger was pointing in other directions and,
I thought he said we could be better. Are you sure he said you're sure he said that?
I listened to that. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Right after he said including the players, but he thinks the roster is good enough, and obviously many people would question that assertion.
What do you think? Do you think the roster is good enough?
Well, it would be closer to good enough if it was healthy. Losing Andrei Sekera was a huge blow, and you can give a lot. You can give crap to Shirelli for not going out and acquiring a top 4 level defenseman and somehow staying within the budget. And it's just not easily done. Those guys are not readily available, and they're certainly not available on the cheap. So the idea was, as last year, and it didn't work then either, was to try and put a Band-Aid on a Band-Aid and take a couple of 4 or 5 defensemen and hope one of them would play consistently like a number 4. And that was a blow. That said, the rest of their core group has been healthy all year. And the way that they were being used, they were dragging butt. I thought the early part of the season, McClellan leaned on the top players on the roster so heavily that they were starting to show signs of wear and tear, and a number of them were slumping in November. So whether something's going to re-energize them or whether a different deployment's going to come in where they have to find a way to do more balance, figure out a way that the bottom 6 and the bottom pairing defensemen will do a better job of holding their own, and that the top guys playing a little bit fewer minutes, but a little bit fresher, will be more well positioned to win games. I mean, who knows? There's going to be different approaches. It'll be very interesting to see how such an experienced coach tackles this problem of a team that he knows, because I mean, he's from here. He's always followed the Oilers, and now that he's been retired, I understand he's watched the team quite a bit this year.
Okay, I would argue this roster is good enough to make the playoffs. I think that, and I want to see if a new coach can do that. If this roster isn't good enough to make the playoffs, Shirelli should obviously be fired. Okay, let's go to Hitchcock.
Good enough to make the playoffs, or good enough to contend? I guess that's the other question. What does he mean by that?
I'll take making the playoffs, Bruce, personally. Because when you're in the playoffs, you're contending. Like you're, we've seen in the playoffs in recent years, if you get in there, all bets are off, man. Any team can make a run, and you just need a hot goalie. And okay, so here's what Ken Hitchcock, and here's what I like about what Hitchcock had to say, Bruce, because he diagnosed what he thought was wrong, and he said why he thought it was wrong. And so his diagnosis, he just came out and said it. I know what is wrong. Yeah. It's not going to get fixed overnight. I've been through this once before, and I'm going to help it along. And then he kind of got into what is wrong, and he spelled it out. If we expect to win hockey games, we're not going to do it on talent. We have to develop an atmosphere where we're 100% locked in on playing for each other and not with each other. So what is wrong, Bruce, is they're playing as individuals. They're not playing for each other, playing with each other. And why did that happen? He also spelled that out. I think frustration sets in, motion gets going, and then you start playing by yourself. Expectations lead in either direction. They can lead to great camaraderie, or when it doesn't work out, they can lead to frustration. When you're frustrated, you go quiet on the ice and with each other. You go quiet in your game. And it looks like you're at times not trying, but it's exactly the opposite. I think I can clear the deck that way. I went through this in St. Louis. We turned it around in 8 or 9 days, and we started to really play for each other. So he's identified the problem. He sees it as kind of a psychological attitudinal problem as much as anything, somewhat related to losing. Mm-hmm. And so is it as simple as you just start winning and things get better? Well, it's probably not that simple. But it sounds like he understands the psychology of the game, of the players extremely well. And he's not some young coach guessing at this kind of stuff. Like, why do teams fall apart? Why do they come together? How do they win? How do they lose? He's not Dallas Eakins coming in with maybe he's got some answers and it's all about technique or this strategy or that strategy. He kind of understands, I think, the team organically and is going to work on it at that level. And I think that's probably the right level of analysis for this team. Just struck hit the spot for me.
Yeah, well, McClellan spoke repeatedly over the years about this team being quiet on the ice. And, I mean, part of that is just internal to the personality of people. You know, some people just go about their business. Others are talkative types. Ideally, you have some kind of mix of the two, but they communicate when it's most, you know, when you need to on the ice, when there's, you know, plays underway. And McClellan, he was aware of that being a bit of an issue with his group. Whether Hitchcock can get the message through to them, I bet he does in the short term. We'll see if it sticks in terms of a higher level of communication on the ice. But I'll guess that's going to be one of the things that he really emphasizes based on his commentary today. He's got... he made, I thought, a couple other interesting comments on his own, knowing his own strengths and weaknesses. And he said, I'm old enough and mature enough to go into a locker room like I did today, and I'm going to do again on Thursday. I guess I have an off day tomorrow. They don't play again until Friday. So Thursday is a full practice. He says, we don't have time to horse around. We don't have time to get into the get-to-know-you phase. We have to get going. I want to be able to tell them what I'm about, good and bad. I want them to be 100% prepared for what they can expect from me, so we don't have to go through the dance. We started that today. I thought the guys responded really well to it. We'll get some more done, a lot done on Thursday. I want to be really clear with the players. This is what I expect. This is what you can expect from me. I'm going to be consistent. This is how I'm going to act. So there's no surprises.
So. Yeah, I get the feeling that some players are going to be, you know, McClellan. Well, it's not like McClellan wasn't doing all these things, but they're going to get it. They're going to get it full force from this coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with players like Leon Draisaitl and how they respond. And right, well. That's a player who comes to mind immediately for me. You know, it's just, it's going to be, and we'll see how quickly we see players like Puljujärvi and Yamamoto and how they respond. And, I'm glad they've turned the page, Bruce. That's where I'm at the end. It was time to turn the page. And that was abundantly clear. And it sounds like Hitchcock, let's end with this. It sounds like he's the interim coach. Mm-hmm. Has anyone actually called him? Year. Yeah, he's the interim coach. See how this works out, essentially. And that's the right plan, too. We don't know what happened with Joel Quenneville, if in fact Quenneville is on the market or not on the market. So maybe he is this summer. Maybe there's going to be lots of options this summer. Maybe Gullitson or Viveros or Yanni will be the man by this summer. Or maybe it'll be Hitchcock again. But I like the fact that it is an interim coach. You know, bring the heat, give him the old goose gossage for a couple innings, and see how that works and go from there. I like that aspect of it.
Yeah, well, I'll admit I didn't see Hitchcock coming. He's just retired. I mean, he coached in the league last year, so it's not like they're bringing him out of the mothballs. He's been a coach in the league for almost a quarter century. And he's got, a whole lot to bring to the table. I mean, one thing Shirelli said that I absolutely agreed with is that there's just not much, you know, during the season, the pool of available coaches is not that full. I mean, you might want to hire someone else as assistant coach. Well, you might be able to do that in July, but you're sure in the hell not going to do it in November during the season. So all those guys are off the table. All the full-time coaches, except the recently fired guys, are off the table, or the recently retired guys. So they went out and they found one of those. And just to reiterate something I said a bit earlier, Craig McTavish, he used to talk about a player needing a second opinion, and he said it in the context of moving the guy along to another organization to see what he needed. Well, these guys are all going to get a second opinion right inside their own team. And if and a respected coach like Ken Hitchcock gives them the same message that a respected coach like Todd McClellan gave him, maybe it's going to land with a little bit more authority, or maybe he's going to deliver a different message or push the magic button with this guy or that. You mentioned Leon Draisaitl. Oh, look at Darnell Nurse as another player that, has really had one coach, other than two games, he's had one coach his entire NHL career. Head coach. He's had a couple of defensive coaches, but there's a player with a hell of a lot of potential that, in my view, has been kind of spinning his wheels this year. And maybe a second opinion comes out on, you know, this is what you do well, this is not what you do well, we want you to cut this aspect out of your game, focus on this. And the smart and motivated players, which really is most of them, that's going to land, and we'll see how they respond. But they're certainly just the mere act of firing the coach is an eye opener and a wake up call for the team. And then what the new guy brings into the room and delivers in terms of the message will build on that. But they're going to be listening pretty closely when Ken Hitchcock opens his mouth in the pregame speech tonight.
All righty, Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking, and I guess we'll talk after the game tonight. It'll be kind of late because I have a practice, unfortunately. I'm coaching.
Oh, yeah. Practice. Well, it's a late game anyway, 8:30 start. Well,
my practice is at 8:45 to 9:45. Oh, wow. So. All right. I'm Spanham.
All right. Well, we'll have a late podcast. I'll be up writing about the game anyway, so whenever you're ready. Okay. And folks that want to listen, you might want to catch up with us tomorrow morning as opposed to whenever we actually get the podcast done tonight. Anyway, first, it'll be an interesting game to watch tonight in the Shark Tank.
My cat's going to come up here and join me. All right, Bruce, thanks for talking.
Right, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.